Okay, so if you heard that message, this call is being recorded for those who couldn't make it at this date and time. And you are all muted at this point, so if you're trying to say something, we can't hear you. But when the time comes that we want to hear a question, there's a way that we'll announce how you can unmute yourself. I'm pleased to introduce our guest today, Kristen Truman, who actually is an ILCT student and took training with us a few years ago. You'll have to tell them when, Kristen. And remember, you also live in Fort Collins, or you did. I see you work in Wyoming now. I don't know if you still live in Fort Collins, but Fort Collins, Colorado, which is near and dear to my heart. I spent 25 years of my life there, and they just had about 12 inches of snow yesterday. So. Since my daughter lives there, too, by the way. So when did you take our courses at ILCT?
So I'm not muted, right?
Yeah, no, you're not. You and I are
not muted. You and I are not. Okay, very good. So I believe I finished spring of 2006.
How many hours
I think
did
I started
you take?
At the end of 2005.
Did you take the whole enchilada of 125 hours?
I completed up to the ACC.
Oh, okay, good.
Yep. And then the following fall, I went to Fielding and did their year-long evidence-based coaching program and completed the PCC from that perspective, yeah.
Terrific. Yeah, I actually was the advising coach to Fielding's program when they were getting that started because they needed an MCC, you know, who could be the director of training for that program.
Right.
So that was great. That's a terrific program. And
it
then,
was,
go ahead.
Well, it was really fantastic, actually, to have been through the ILCT training and then do that, because I felt like there were a number of people who started at the evidence-based coaching course at Fielding who hadn't had any formal coaching instruction. And so I felt like I had some skills that, especially the from therapist to coach kind of skills, moving past that, that others didn't have the opportunity to have.
Yeah. I know when, I think it was Lenny Wildflower and Francine Campone, I think were involved in your program, is that right?
Right, yep.
Yep. And when that was being developed, it was I got to take it online, and it was even challenging for me. But it's a terrific program, and I think it's a great way to start with ILCT and then take other courses out there for your advanced training. So then what happened? How have you used coaching since you've taken all that training, and what have you been doing?
Yeah, so then what happened? Well, I finished ILCT, and I was highly influenced and stimulated to leave my clinical practice. I was a nurse in the emergency department at the time, and being a clinical nurse specialist, then I decided to leave nursing at the bedside and begin my own coaching program, and so my own coaching practice, rather. And so I started my own practice and did that part-time to full-time, and also did some learned clinical simulation, which is basically like human simulators, like dummies that breathe and talk and so do some experiential stuff to kind of make sure that I had benefits, and did that part-time and built a coaching practice. And then after about a year and a half, decided to go to Cheyenne and bring my coaching, my clinical simulation, all of my nursing background, and my Outward Bound experiential learning experience bring that all to an OD organization development director position in Cheyenne at the hospital.
Wow.
And I did that for 3 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Started a coaching program at the hospital so that all of the leaders could, in the beginning of their leadership orientation, have about 6 months of coaching, development coaching as part of their leadership onboarding, and then also anyone else in the organization who wanted coaching, who were high-performing employees who were, you know, prompted for success, they were ready to lift off, they could receive coaching also. So we had five other coaches, including myself, to help provide that coaching through the organization. They're still doing that. I've moved on into an administrative role and have, for the last 2.5 years, brought my coaching into my leadership, and I'm the administrator for nursing at the hospital, and I have a team of 10 people who I bring, I coach and teach coaching to as leaders so that they can provide that to the rest of their staff and hopefully provide excellent patient care from their perspective.
Terrific. So in addition to providing coaching with your team of coaches, you also taught, I guess we could call it the coach approach to the leaders, so people could almost do what you might call peer coaching. Is that what it sounded like? Or
Some peer coaching, but then also just having the coach approach so that the leaders who are leading their staff are approaching. I mean, there is an opportunity for telling, but then that they're also really bringing a coaching kind of mindset to evoke more from their staff and from their teams.
Yeah, well, fantastic. You really, really use the training well. Now, this call, as we advertise, is about using metaphor in coaching.
Right.
So how did that come about in your life? I mean, I know a little bit about it because I was one of your interview subjects. So why don't you tell our audience how that came to be part of your life?
This particular topic in my dissertation or metaphor in general?
Yeah, well, metaphor in general and why you did it as your dissertation.
Okay. So what was really exciting is I did my evidence-based coaching at Fielding and decided to do the year-long program because I was intending to do a PhD. And so that's a master's level course, and I knew that that would flow right into the PhD. So as I was doing that course, and it was more practical, and as I'm guessing many of the people on the call are in coaching. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think most people on the call are either ILCT students or they subscribe to our newsletter, so they're involved in the coaching industry, yes.
Okay. So very similar, there's a lot of opportunity to be peer coaching each other and learning from each other and then getting feedback. And what happened for me was that I was starting to get feedback about the automatic use of metaphor in the coaching conversation when I was coaching. And so people started asking me about that. Did I learn that somewhere? What was that for me? How did I do that? How was I listening for those specific words? And so I started to have an awareness of that as part of my particular coaching style, my particular dance. And so as I was working on my PhD then, I wasn't sure what my topic would be. I knew that I was really interested in consciousness and imagery, intuition, and it all started to come together with my love for experiential learning, transformation, and coaching. Mm-hmm. And it all, my research then ended up being kind of at the intersection of all of those things, metaphor, coaching, and transformational learning.
Right.
And then it just happened.
Right, yeah. So I know you interviewed me as one of your subjects for the dissertation and how metaphor was transformational in my life from coaching experience I had. So maybe there's a way you could kind of summarize what you discovered or what was the, like if we went to the last page of your dissertation right up.
the summary slide?
Yeah.
Really what I learned from all 10 subjects was that that metaphor seems to evokes this shift in, there were 4 main themes. So metaphor evokes a shift in awareness. It created personal shifts, which for the subjects that turned out to be perspective, emotional, and behavioral shifts. Metaphor also initiated life changes, and the participants referred to that as either a way of being or a transformation. And metaphor became a reminder. Somehow there were these symbols, either symbols, emotional cues, or verbal cues that then continued to remind them of the changes that they had made in their lives and the personal shifts that they had made. So when I looked at all 10 participants and how those themes started to show up, there seemed to be this cycle where the metaphor, whether it came from the coach or whether it came from the client, generated an awareness, which then created this personal shift in emotion, behavior, or perspective. Mm-hmm. Then there was the subsequent life changes. Then these reminders, which were physical, emotional, and verbal, would create a re-awareness. So over time, whether it was 10, 15 years, or I had one participant who was 4 months prior, they had also experienced this ongoing kind of cycle with reminders. And then so the symbol or the emotional cue that had come up from the metaphor would regenerate the awareness and continue to prompt their change in behavior. That was sort of the bottom line.
Yeah, fascinating. So, my background that got me excited about metaphor, back in my former life as a psychologist, I was trained in Ericksonian hypnotherapy and then neuro-linguistic programming and tangents of that. So metaphor became something I used a lot. And I did a lot of child psychology and couples work. And I found that I was just naturally using metaphor because I felt, and this is proven true in coaching too, that whenever there was a place of stuckness or whenever there seemed to be a invitation for a creative view, the metaphor idea just seemed to be better than words and thinking and talking. And so did you find that in the subject you interviewed or in your experience and used metaphor in coaching? And we had a question about this from somebody, so this is always raised. Do you bring up a metaphor for working with the client, or do you listen to their language and use a metaphor that arrives?
It's interesting because there is some theory that says the coach should never bring up a metaphor.
Right.
Lawley and Tompkins talk about clean language and that you should really use the client's own language.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're really working with, and I referred to this in the dissertation too, because I didn't study it specifically that way. I was curious about where the metaphors came from, and it was mixed. And some people, their lives changed because the coach's metaphor came in, and some brought their own. So from this research, there would need to be a little bit there would need to be more research done to determine truly if it needs to be the coach versus the client where the metaphor
mm-hmm.
comes from. But what I noticed is that if you have a whole, healthy client and you're not worried about language and what's coming up for people, so if it's not something really traumatic and people are really healthy and whole, then it's okay to bring in your own conversation because you're co-creating from the healthiness of your dialogue. So for at least in this research and in my own experience, it's been okay to bring up a metaphor. So if they were stuck, I could say, this is what I'm observing, or this is, you're kind of a, in quicksand or something, whatever the metaphor happened to be that was coming up. And then the client has every opportunity to say, no, it's not really quicksand. It's more like I'm soaring in my I've got a broken wing, or whatever that metaphor seemed to be for them. And then the dialogue goes from there. But you're right, there becomes this opportunity to get imaginative, and it removes the emotion if they can reframe the situation away from their own situation and then describe the image or the metaphor and change their perceptions and then take all of that information that they got out of the metaphor and then reapply and reframe to their own situation.
Yeah, I actually ask it almost as a rhetorical question because I do both. I mean, you know, really what we teach at ILCT, as people know listening to this call, is yes, you want to be non-directive in your coaching, of course, and you're not advising and trying to fix your client, but you also have some wisdom that is drawn out from the coaching conversation. So if in the course of a conversation you have this intuitive hit, you have this image come to mind, and you think, wow, you know, I'm getting this image of you being careening down a mountain road with icy conditions, and I don't know, maybe that's crazy, but what do you think? You know, you just offer that to the client, and they can accept it, they can reject it, or they can bounce off of it and say, no, it's not that. It's more like, you know, a roller coaster ride or, you know, that sort of thing.
I'll give you a quick example of one of the participants. Actually, was the coach brought in a metaphor that she'd never heard of. She was feeling really chaotic and was talking about her situation at work and at home, and the coach said, "Wow, when I look at you, I am observing a Tesla coil." And and when she was, I didn't know what she was explaining it to me. I had to ask her what it was because I didn't
know
the metaphor. And a Tesla coil ungrounded meant that there's this there's these connections that aren't being made. And so it was describing her as really chaotic and energy ungrounded and all over the place. And it had been 10 years prior, and she still uses Tesla-ing as if it's a verb to say,
wow,
this is what's going on for me. And there's this new self-awareness of, okay, there's a lot of chaos. I need to get myself grounded. And there are certain behaviors she took to get herself grounded. And
right.
So she is one who would say, and she did say, there was no aha in the moment. It was later when it landed for her,
right,
and became so powerful. But there was nothing destructive or harmful in the coach bringing in,
right,
wow, I'm observing a Tesla coil. Does that resonate for you? And then, of course, she could play with it, massage it, do whatever she wanted to with it, and it ultimately changed her life.
You know, this conversation, it brings back, this is so exciting. And when I was interviewed and when you and I talked some, it really brought back part of my history. It goes back, gosh, I think it was 19, let's see, I got my psychology license in 1980, and then I did private practice. So like the late 80s, I would have taken training from David Grove, who came to Denver, and he's the founder of Clean Language. But at the time, he was either British or I think he was from New Zealand. I could be wrong. But he came and he was doing a training, and I was working with a lot of sex abuse survivors and children of abusive, you know, incest, that sort of thing. And the Grove work in Clean Language that you mentioned earlier, and I'll give a reference to all of you listening here in a minute, was just phenomenal to me. It was game-changing in the therapy that I did with kids and families. But then later on, as I got into coaching, as you've mentioned, the followers of David Grove, I mean, he's either very old or not on this earth anymore, I'm not sure, call it Clean Language. And there's some references.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book called Metaphors in Mind by Lolly and Tompkins, James Lolly and Penny Tompkins, that references that. There's a book called Mining Your Client's Metaphors, about using clean language and symbolic modeling. And then there's a book called Clean Language by Wendy Sullivan and Judy Reese. So I bring that up because I teach an advanced coaching course in metaphors every year, and I'm going to be giving that to post on the LCT website, probably going to do it in, well, let's see, it's already almost June, so probably July and August or maybe September, kind of a 490-minute courses. And I think what's interesting, the reason I circle back to all of this, is what you did in your research and what you found going from clinical practice to coaching is that when we're not working with fragile clients, metaphors really, the use of metaphors really help expand, use the term transformational learning, I think. I think that's the key. So what do you find in how often do you use the tool of metaphor? And I might include, I even include storytelling and allegory. I mean, sometimes it's not all metaphor, but to get
right
to that preconscious or unconscious part of a person's mind that's beyond words. Do you find that you use it frequently?
I use it all of the time.
Yeah.
I use it intuitively. I use it intentionally. So I use it with coaching, and I don't have formal coaching clients where we're doing pure coaching right now, where, you know, we have 3 to 6 sessions consecutive, and we're focused on something specific. But I use it. I do coach my leaders and then other people that I happen to be, that I interact with,
right,
other leaders that I work with, that I report to, other executives. And so I use it in those conversations, but I also use it in retreats or any kind of awareness building session that we're trying to accomplish something new. So what's interesting is that what you said about just using it, whether it's story or allegory. When I was doing the research, people had to be able to say they used a metaphor. And
right,
it didn't matter to me what they called it, a metaphor. If they used something in terms of something else, then we called it a metaphor. So
right,
there were somebody had a rock, somebody had a Tesla coil, somebody had bricks and sponges, and it really didn't matter as long as they were owning the properties of that object or symbol or story.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do a lot of right now is I'll bring metaphor into design work. So, and some of this has to do with Schoen's generative work, if you tied it into theory. But say, for instance, last week I was working with a team who was trying to redesign the structure of how they staff the hospital. And so there's a team that helps staff. And so I brought the team together and asked them to identify a metaphor for the word's leaving me. Hold on. Give me another word for resource. Starts with an R. It totally just escaped me.
You're trying to think of a reference.
I'm trying to think of the word that I used that I said. I gave them a word and I said, find the metaphor for this.
Okay.
And it had to do with resource instead of an R, and it's escaping me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it'll come to you.
It'll come to me. So I said, give me, you know, I broke them up into teams and said, give me a metaphor for this thing. And somebody came up with a metaphor for troops. You need the word. Basically trying to figure out how do you deploy resources. And so somebody had a metaphor of a beaver dam group of people. Somebody had a metaphor of the judicial system. Somebody had a metaphor of troops. And so we had, those were three of them. There was one more I can't remember off the top of my head. And so they all wrote down, drew the picture, talked about what the metaphor was, what are the systems, how do they communicate, how does this system work, and then identified all the elements of all of those systems and then said, okay, our resources then are have these as essential elements. And so they could start from scratch around how do we want to rebuild our resource team or resources with these essential things in mind that they developed all from separate metaphors. Then they could step completely away from what they were already working on instead of it being kind of cutting and pasting what's working and what's not working and poking holes in it. They could then redesign something totally new from the elements of something natural in the environment, some other systems that are already working. And it was really, really powerful. They generated a whole new system, and they loved it. Nobody was emotionally attached because they were looking at something new and fresh and learned something new from the other metaphor. So that's an example
right.
of how to bring it in, where you're just saying, what's the metaphor for that? Or with leaders when they
right.
feel stuck, what's the metaphor? What are you experiencing right now?
Right.
And I find that when the metaphor is in most natural, when there's something natural in the environment that they can
right.
they can identify with, then it's less, it makes more sense to them.
Yeah, for those on the call who are ILCT students, and you may not remember reading this, I actually reference metaphors and analogies in the Becoming a Professional Life Coach book that Diane Menendez and I wrote. So on page 132 to 139, there's, if you want to go back and look at that specific section, there's some good references there. And the use of that language. I mean, I love using metaphors. And somebody had a question about this, so let me just reference it. When's the best place to use it? I think when a client is stuck or when the coach is stuck or when the metaphor just pops up out of the blue. So one way that everybody on this call can think about a way to elicit metaphor. First of all, listen, you know, coaching is about focused listening. So listen to the words, images. If somebody says some word that implies an image, you might say something, and this is an example of clean language. Tell me more about stuck. So if a client says, I really feel stuck, or I'm torn, or whatever. See, there's a metaphor right there. Somebody says, I'm torn.
Right. Did you notice the metaphors in my description, too, of cut and paste and poking holes?
Exactly.
And,
right. We use it all the time. I've got a whole list of words that we can use instead of non-violent words to replace violent metaphors, because we do bullet points, you're on target, you know, really good
right.
aim. I mean, it's interesting if you start listening to your client's language. That's one thing. You can just simply say more about that or tell me more about that. Another way is to say, and how's the way I phrase this? Oh, use this phrase. So when somebody's talking about a situation where they're wanting some change, I mean, they're confused, they're stressed, they're frustrated, whatever it is, and then say, and when you experience that, it is like what? Because if you say that's like what or it is like what, you're almost always going to get a metaphor because of the word like. So now I know that may be also a simile or an analogy. I'm not trying to be grammatically correct here. But if you say right. it's like what, they may say, oh, God, it's like being sucked into a vacuum and not, you know, I mean, I just made that up just now. It just came to me.
Right.
So that's a word I would tell everybody on this call. If in the middle of a coaching conversation, you can say, and when you experience that, it's like what? You're almost always going to get a metaphor. So let's look at some of the questions people sent in, if you don't mind. Somebody asked about clean language in Milton Erickson, and I would simply say, you know, Milton Erickson is the father of American hypnosis, not the kind of hypnosis where you watch a watch and go deep into sleep, but linguistic hypnosis, the use of language. And he's a fascinating, I mean, I trained as an Ericksonian linguist, and the best book for somebody to read about Milton Erickson is called Uncommon Therapy by Jay Haley. So consider that. Look online. You can get a used copy. You don't have to spend a bunch of money. Google Milton Erickson. You'll find out a lot about him. I've got 42 volumes of Erickson's writings. So I've really got a lot of that stuff. And then somebody else said, is the cycling self-generated by the client or does the coach facilitate the process? We kind of talked about that.
Yeah.
And I think it's either or both and. I mean,
well, and what's interesting is
go ahead. You don't want to direct the client, but go ahead, your perspective
on
that.
Yeah, you don't. And what I found out in this research is that people, a lot of people actually had symbols, some kind of physical symbol where they could see it and it would redirect their cycle. So the gentleman who had a rock actually had a rock in his pocket while he was going through his changes and then placed it on his computer and then later repurposed the rock, put it back in his pocket when there was a set of actions he had to do. And so if it's a physical reminder, then it becomes your own and it doesn't need to be coach generated. Some people,
right.
You might actually be talking to your family and friends and say, okay, when you notice me doing such and such a thing, Teslaying, you know, remind me you're Teslaying. And so, you know, you've got this verbal response that's really between you and someone else that you've made that agreement with. And it can be the coach, but usually, at least for these participants, it was self-generated.
Uh-huh.
And then when we did the research, it regenerated for them. And so some of them hadn't remembered. And then after the research contacted me and said, oh, yes, since this came up, I started doing this again, that kind of thing. So, because it's tied to their emotion,
yeah.
Anytime the symbol comes up emotionally, it becomes their own self-generated cycle.
Yes, yes. Now, another, I mean, as we talk back and forth, I'm thinking, so my doctoral degree, my master's degree is in humanistic psychology, and my doctorate in transpersonal psychology. So I did a lot in the early 70s and 80s with things that had to do with getting to transpersonal consciousness, whether it be, you know, meditation, biofeedback, et cetera. And one of the things was guided imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So the use of guided imagery has also been well documented. I'm also trained in psychosynthesis, Roberto Assagioli from Italy. And I only mention that because these are resources that are greatly available to all of you for coaching. So the idea of guided imagery, you know, and I talk about that in my class, is you might have somebody, you know, walk up a mountain, go to this temple, talk to this wise person. So you're kind of guiding the experience, but just like in your outward bound experiences, you don't know. I mean, you go to Canyonlands, Utah with a group of 20 people, you don't know exactly what their personal experience is going to be. in real life or in a metaphorical experience of careening through canyons. So that's something else I would mention to people, is the idea of guided imagery and psychosynthesis. And I talk about that in the class that's upcoming. There's another question here that somebody wants to know. Are there moments when metaphor is particularly useful? We kind of touched on that a little bit, like maybe when the client is stuck or the coach is stuck, but did you discern anything about that in your research or in your own coaching experience, when it's most useful or particularly useful?
I agree with you. I think it's when there's a particular stuckness. I think it's really useful for coaches if they're feeling stuck. And I think when the emotion's really, really high, it's useful also, because the emotion can kind of, when you say, for instance, I'm talking about something particularly uncomfortable or emotional, if I start talking about it in terms of a tree, I decrease my own emotion and I can see it more objective and more clearly.
Right.
So staying out of the realm of therapy, but if it is a coaching situation that is uncomfortable and maybe they're talking about their own self in terms of self-judgment or they're getting in their own way, which could be the metaphor in and of itself.
Yes.
If they're getting in their own way, to remove it, identify a metaphor, then you can really make it objective and less emotional.
Yeah. So let me make a comment about that, because some of the people that are on our call come from a clinical background, and some of them are still doing clinical work, counseling, psychotherapy, maybe nurse practitioner, whatever, like you were. And I want to be very clear. I mean, we obviously teach distinctions between therapy and coaching. But the coach approach and coaching skills, and specifically here today, the use of metaphor, can work with a clinical population. In other words, those with a DSM, whatever it is now, 5, I don't know what it is, diagnosis, or coming to you for behavioral or emotional, you know, treatment, as opposed to somebody who's coming to you for coaching. You need to always make that distinction. But the good news is that what came out of the annals of psychology, from David Grove's work in Clean Language, from even Carl Jung and Maslow, and then on with Milton Erickson and others, it's a rich field to delve into with coaching, because coaching is about conversation. And it's not about fixing. It's about a co-creative, as you mentioned earlier, conversation with your client, to have them, you know, say what they've not said and think what they've not thought and dream out loud and think out loud and all that in the presence of somebody who's just listening to them. That's the power. And I think if you don't get into metaphor, in fact, if you're ever assessed for your final exam at ILCT and your oral exam or with an ICF verbal exam, metaphor is an advanced skill in direct language, one of the 11 core competencies. Good assessors will listen for the use of metaphor as a skill set. So it's a competency, it's a sub-competency under direct communication in the ICF language. So let's try this, Kristen. Let's see if we don't have too much noise online. If somebody on the call has a question, we have about 15 or 20 minutes left before we need to wrap up.
Okay.
So if somebody has a question, you can push *6, I think is the way you would do that, and ask your question. And if there's noise on the line or something, we'd ask you to push it again and mute yourself. But if anybody has a question now in real time, push *6 and just ask your question. Is there a question from somebody on the line? Okay. Well, I thought I heard a beginning of a voice, but I didn't. So, if somebody has this, is that somebody? No.
I do have a quick question.
Okay. Good. Who's this?
My name is Brandon Adams.
Hi, Brandon. What's your question?
So, When using metaphors, how does that play into using stories? And I'm not trying to introduce another topic, but I've read that when coaching clients, sometimes you run into situations where it's good to use a technique of stories. How would that work with metaphors? Or is that something that would be good to combine or not?
Yeah, I've got some thoughts about that. Kristen, what would you respond to that? Storytelling or sharing the story with a client, how does that relate to the topic of metaphor?
So I think you've got to just be careful not to get too hung up on the definition. Story can be just as effective. One of the participants in my research, actually, their metaphor, it became a metaphor for him as a result of the story. So he had actually been in a group coaching situation where there was a teacher actually talking about a quote-unquote tea boy, meaning someone who actually delivers tea to a priest. And the priest, his story was the priest didn't suddenly notice the tea boy wasn't there, but the thing about the tea boy was that he was really annoying. And so when the tea boy wasn't there, he noticed the value of the tea boy and had previously only been focusing on what was annoying. So the participant in my study went, listened to the story, but then suddenly changed the story to say, wow, what are my tea boys? Then that became a metaphor for him. How am I a T-boy for someone else? Where do I notice T-boys? So the story, he took a piece of the story out and made it the metaphor for him and then took action from there. So it became his symbol or an object. So the element of the story is really what made it a metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, good stories have metaphors or they have imagery. So here's the message I want everybody to get. This is not a master's class in English grammar. We're throwing simile, analogy, metaphor, stories in this mix of using, I guess we could call it metaphoric or the alternative.
Even symbolic even.
Yeah, symbolic learning. So my comment about stories is the more experienced you are, you're going to have stories from previous clients, from situations, from things you've heard from other people. And, of course, you always want to not make it identifiable. You don't want to say, I had a client, you know, it was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard, tell me this. So you don't want to make it identifiable. But stories can be good. There was a book years ago called Stories for the Third Ear that I used a lot in working with young kids. And I soon found out that it was very powerful with adults. You know, the favorite books I have, gosh, right here on my shelf, I've got, you know, The Wizard of Oz, Velveteen Rabbit, Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, why are those my favorite stories? Because they've got a childhood theme that applies to concepts of things like The Velveteen Rabbit becoming real, or The Wizard of Oz. I mean, who doesn't like The Wizard of Oz? Over and over and over with the concept of, we don't need to go into the details. So if you can ever tell a story, a brief, I mean, you don't want to pontificate with your client and put them to sleep, but sometimes you can offer that as something you would introduce or invite the client to consider. I've got a brief story that may relate to this if you want to listen, and the client may say, sure.
I think depending on what the context too is, I want to share a little bit of what I've been doing with stories or movies with teams and building them to generate awareness. So I started, I don't know how many of you have seen Rise of the Guardians, but the movie is really all about finding your center and coming from that center to generate more light and less fear. And I mean, the metaphors are all over the place. And it depends on where people are individually. So I actually took my team of leaders to watch the movie and then came back, did some metaphor work and big, powerful questions to help generate awareness from the perspective of what did they just watch, and then have also just recently done that with the movie Frozen.
Oh.
So think really outside the box of what you could do with, and, you know, it brings back that message of stories and also where the metaphor comes from. And the previous question about where, when is it most useful or when is it maybe most beneficial. And using experiences that people have and maybe their hobbies, what they love, those things to connect with them from the metaphor makes it really powerful. And then they're using their own story of, oh, when I was gardening, or when I was a child and we were farming, or when, you know, their own stories there too.
Yeah. It's an interesting point you make, because I just got the DVD of Frozen. I finally had to buy it. I was waiting to watch it with my four-year-old granddaughter, and I finally told my wife, I think we need to watch it. It's like a phenomenon that nobody believed was going to happen. So it must touch something that even Disney didn't know it would do for people. It's one of those universal metaphors that has really captured people. And like Star Wars, and like, you know, Wizard, what's his name, Harry Potter, and all those things, they kind of touch a part of us that Carl Jung would call the collective unconscious, or our deep-seated, you know, memories. And if you can find anything like that to use in coaching, you're not trying to become a guru. You're just trying to use something that's useful and non-usual. I don't want to say unusual, but non-usual, because a coaching conversation is meant to be uniquely different than what somebody has at Starbucks.
Right. Make it imaginative.
Imaginative, yeah. So I think, you know, does anybody else have a live question? And Brandon, thank you for that question. Somebody else in a moment now, if you want to push *6 and ask your question. We've got some time for a couple more. Somebody got a question?
Hi. Pat, this is Lauren Holmes.
Yes, hi.
From Parksville. I have a question. You know, when I'm coaching and using metaphors with some clients, I tend to work with military spouses and even some military personnel. They're very, they tend to be very analytical, and they do not like the use of metaphors. And so I'm wondering, how can I kind of integrate that a little more, you know, I guess be a little more subtle, because it's like, have a simile or a metaphor, and it's like, no, you know, stop right here. This is the way things, this is the way things are. This is how we see them. You know, it's almost like it's a funny. It's almost like it is like it's a map, and it's like, this is how things are. This is the way they are, and we're not going to, you know, do any, I believe one client called it woo-woo unicorn stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that hilarious.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because the challenge for me, and I might ask Kristen's point of view, is that whether or not they think they don't want to use metaphor is, I can't believe they're not. I mean, if you listen to their language, if you listen to anybody's language talking about an experience, there will be a metaphor. So my response would be, don't label it, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know?
Yeah, it would be surprising to see what metaphors they're using to describe how they don't like metaphor. And there are also some experiences that they probably, I mean, just like you used the word map, there will be things that resonate for them. So like Pat's question earlier about what is it like, they could come into it all on their own. Or I had an interesting experience talking to somebody who was like, I hate metaphor, I'm not good at it, I'm all about the spreadsheet. And so, okay, so as they were talking, I asked them to say more about, if this were to go into a spreadsheet, how would it look? And so we used the spreadsheet as the metaphor. They didn't know that's what they were doing, but it was their own language, and used it as a symbol to help them get clear about what they wanted to do, to put it in a frame that made sense for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think what I would urge everybody to do is, in my class, I had a student who said, I just don't get this metaphor. You know, it's really, it's confusing. It just makes me feel like choked off. And I went, the whole class was kind of silent. And I went, wasn't that just a metaphor? Or a simile or analogy? I mean, people don't, you think it's something mystical, and it's something that's part of language. We were imaginary before we were linguistic, right? We were visual before we had words to put to that. So it's our early language. when people created alphabets and paintings and hieroglyphics and all that. I mean, visualization came first. Metaphor came first. So,
so just listening for using words that are in terms of another word or in a word to in terms of another experience, if you're just listening for it, it might emerge surprisingly.
Okay.
I tell you what, we've got about 13 minutes left, Kristen. Either you or I, would you be willing to maybe either take a 5-minute opportunity with somebody on the call and see if you can use an example of a metaphor?
Sure.
You know, I mean, if somebody's got a situation you're up with or the client situation, why don't we just take about 7 minutes or so for you to have a conversation with Kristen, and then let's see how metaphors are used in that conversation, and then we'll stop and wrap up. So if anybody's got a situation in their own life, don't make it very personal, but something you're up against or a client situation that you want to talk about as a coach or a counselor, bring that up right now. So push *6 if you're on mute, and we'll take the first person we hear.
Hey, this is Brendan. I'd like to volunteer.
Okay, Brendan.
Hey, Brendan.
You're
I'm
on.
Working. Okay. This is a coaching situation. I'm working with a business client, and I'm having some challenges with this particular client because they're very successful and they're very good at what they do, but they tend to be overly aggressive with their staff and their communication. And I'm finding it challenging, and this is not the first business client that I've worked with, but this is the first one I've worked with where I found it to be challenging to communicate with them.
Mm.
They speak in a very rapid pace. They speak in a very authoritative tone. And when you're communicating with them, if there's gaps in your speech to them, if you pause for a moment to ponder your next statement, they tend to use up all those gaps. So I'm actually having a little bit of trouble trying to pinpoint the communication style I need to pursue to continue coaching this client to get the results they're asking for.
Pat, can I take it?
Yeah, you want me to do it? And then maybe you can be kind of an observer, commenter. So Brandon, first of all, as a coach, you can almost take off your coaching hat and do a teaching moment with a client where you might say, I find it helpful in my coaching that sometimes we use the power of silence as much as we use the power of questions. And I notice that when there's a brief gap in space, verbal space, it seems to be filled with words. Maybe that's the kind of language I'd use to this client. So I would invite them to experience, this might be a great opportunity for something like guided imagery. But I'm more interested in how you're experiencing, like what is it you're like in the moment when you're frustrated or whatever, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but not knowing, how are you experiencing your relationship with a client in those moments when they fill the space with words and yet you want to be an effective coach with them for their outcomes? What's it like for you?
Honestly, I honestly feel like the role has been shifted to where this is not a coach and a client relationship, but I am this client's employee. The way it feels is that he is communicating with me as he would his employees, which is exactly why we're in this coaching relationship, is the feedback from employees has been such that this person, as successful as they are, they need to have some coaching to change this communication style.
Uh-huh. And does this person know that that's their goal? That's why they're in coaching? Do they know that that's a stated goal?
They know it is a goal, and what I've discovered so far is that this has been a very successful pattern for them,
mm-hmm.
and it's extremely difficult for them to let go of because they've achieved quite a bit of success using this pattern, you know, throughout their career.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's almost a checklist item. Okay, I'll go through the coaching. You know, this has been what's been directed, so going to do this, check it off, we'll be done with it, and back to business we go.
Well, there's a lot that I could say about how you might work with the client, but what I'm interested in is how what's your experience in those moments, knowing what you know and knowing what you'd like to be doing, what's it like for you? So when you have a conversation with this client, if you could imagine that right after this call, you're having a conversation with this client, what's that like for you? So what do you think of before when you have the same old, it becomes like what for you?
I'm going to use a little bit of a sports metaphor here. It's like a wrestling
okay.
match. If you haven't heard about collegiate wrestling, it's like a wrestling
uh-huh.
match with this client. That's exactly what it's like. That's how I feel. When we get off the phone or if I happen to be with this client in person, when I leave and get done, I feel like I've just had a pretty doggone competitive match.
Wow. So what might you do differently to shift that experience? For you. For you as well as the client.
Maybe I don't need to wrestle with this guy.
You don't need to wrestle with the guy.
Maybe I shouldn't be trying to wrestle with him. And I haven't been able to pinpoint, like, if I don't wrestle, does he get the feeling that, oh, okay, fine, I'm just going to run this call myself or this session myself. And that's kind of been why I've been engaging with him the way I have. And it's leading to me feeling exhausted in some regards after the session is over.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure how to, so to speak, disarm him so that we can actually have a conversation.
So listen to the word you just stated right there, how to disarm him. What's that? Say more about disarming this client.
Somehow to figure out, how can I express that? He has to know that he's not in charge of this. And he doesn't have to be in charge of this. This session is his session,
uh-huh.
but it's not something he has to control. It's not something he
mm-hmm.
has to be in charge of and direct
mm-hmm.
and lead
mm-hmm.
As he does in his day job.
So in my coaching, I mean, I'm fast-forwarding here because I know we're limited on time. So if I were mentoring you on the coaching and all that you've learned in coaching – is instead of trying to tell him what you'd like him to understand, is to ask some learner question, some open-ended question, like, Bill, what's it like for you when blank? You know, or even as a coach to share your observations. I mean, that's a valuable part of direct communication. We might call it truth-telling. Truth as you see it. I mean, it's not... It's just your observation. Say, you know, Bill, what I notice, I don't know if this client's male or female. I didn't hear you say that, but I'll just pretend your client's Bill. So, Bill, you know, I notice that when we have these conversations, I'm finding myself at some point feeling like I've kind of been in a wrestling match, feeling like, or I'm experiencing our relationship in this way. And I'm wondering how that shows up elsewhere in your work life, that, you know, just that. I mean, keep the words brief. Does that show up anywhere else in your work life? So is to ask him questions about what you're experiencing and to share what you're experiencing, not in a judgmental way, but And, you know, it's like if you and your body are feeling tight, you're feeling tired, you're feeling like you said, I feel like an employee. I don't know that you'd go that way. That'd be one you want to use with a sacred, you know, a careful conversation. But listen to your experience, and after the call, maybe make some notes and say, next time I want to say, you know, Bill, when we had our last conversation, what was your experience of that like? Let's talk about the time we spent together. Well, how did you experience that? So just things like that. Don't, you know, non-judgmental. You're not probing as a lawyer at the stand, but you're probing from wonder and curiosity. Does any of that I've said prove helpful to you?
Yeah, that's definitely a different approach, and not one that I've seriously considered.
When we feel stuck as coaches, when we have a client that challenges us, I mean, you can get into a lot of things like, okay, there's some mirror, there's some part of me that's reacting to some part of them, and get all the Jungian stuff and all that. But basically, you don't have to, as a coach, you're just there to be of service to your client. And you want to offer them, and sometimes you have to kick them with a velvet boot. That's an advanced skill, a velvet boot, because we say sometimes you have to just say what you say, say what you see, say what you know, say what you observe. It's not the truth, but it's your observation, which means you're risking what? If you're that honest, if you're that specific, what are you risking?
Well, you're going to be opening yourself up, and maybe some, you might be risking some trust.
Yeah. I mean, you might lose them as a client. You might find that they don't get it. You might find that they continue to frustrate you. There's so many directions we could go with this, but I think I love your question, and I think if you listen to the words you use, like, I need to disarm this client, I would urge you to play with that for a minute. What would it take, you know, what comes to mind if you were to think about disarming, especially with a wrestling metaphor? You know, how do you take somebody's strength away from them, or how do you, you know, use that in a way that's helpful? And the more you can share transparently with the client, I think that's good. And listen for metaphors with this client. Listen for opportunities to speak with metaphor. Kristen, any comments about that interchange?
Yeah, this was fantastic. There were about 5 metaphors that I heard that I would have potentially followed too. Language like gaps, which you went in there, and pinpoint was his language. Pattern, role shift, the wrestling match, and of course disarming him. I was really curious to know a little bit more about what it was like to be in the wrestling match so that he could get really clear about, if he weren't in the wrestling match, what that experience would be, so then he'd know what choices to make.
Right.
Just from the outset, that's what I was observing.
Right.
And then also the metaphor of the employee. And maybe I wouldn't have followed it. I would have just observed that or asked, but lots in the language of what was potential in terms of a metaphor that we probably don't think of as a metaphor if we automatically go to things like gardening or tug of war or quicksand or carrying the weight of the world or those kinds of things. But fantastic.
Yeah,
and just to go into it, and observe it, and I mean, how I think the client then would understand it too, if you're using the same language, especially if it's neutral language.
Yeah.
I feel like we're in a wrestling match, and have them just talk about it, and then you can let go of it and see what happens.
Yeah, the idea of clean language, and then we need to wrap up, is that you don't add to the client's metaphor, but just say things like, tell me more. Or when you experience wrestling, that's like what? things like that. So that used a metaphor. This is a very rich topic, and we filled a whole hour without having any problem covering that time. So I want to thank you for being here. And, you know, if people want to contact you more about your dissertation or your research, are you willing to give out your contact, or do we want to
just... Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you want to get a hold of Kristen, how do you do that?
The best way would be to email me at Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, Truman, T-R-U-M-A-N, @gmail.com. Or you could call me at 307-421-1114, then I'm happy to share.
Okay, so Kristen Truman at gmail.com, K-R-I-S-T-E-N-T-R-U-M-A-N, at gmail.com. That's probably the easiest rather than phone calling. But thank you. Thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you, Pat.
Delighted to catch up with you. And,
yes,
and I'll,
you too.
I'll try to contact you when I'm in Fort Collins in June or July. We're planning our trip. So
please do.
I will. And thank you all for being here for the monthly forum. And, you know, if you have any comments that you want to make following this, we've got the ILCT blog and the Facebook page and student newsletter and all those things. You can also contact me at pat@lifecoachtraining.com. But we thank you all for being here and those listening to the recording. So make it a great day.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.